Hello, everyone, and welcome to the unofficial Unreal Engine podcast, where we talk about all things Unreal Engine and also grandmothers of the future. I'm your host, Alex, and with me today is Sam Anderson. This is the first episode of 2025. Good to be back. Very excited to have Sam on the podcast. How are you, Sam?
I'm doing well. How are you? I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, this has been something I've been looking forward to for a while. I've been a huge fan of you ever since the first time I saw you present your work with Shop Architects, and we're going to go through your whole awesome history. I think you're also the first guest we've had on the podcast who has actually worked for Epic Games full time. So we'll touch on that as much as NDAs will allow for. But a lot of exciting things we're going to cover today. We'll talk about some recent news, things like Fab taking over the marketplace and how that rollout's been happening, as well as some upcoming things in the Epic Games ecosystem. But first, we are going to start with a little bit of word association. How does that sound, Sam?
Sounds great.
Fantastic. I'm going to say a word, take a sip from my nice Unreal Engine mug here, and then you just tell me the first thing that comes to mind. Here we go. Home.
Lovely.
Work.
Art.
Food.
Tex-Mex.
Travel.
Inspiring.
Fortnite.
Curious.
Twin Motion.
Fun.
Unreal Engine.
Robust.
Great. Awesome answers. A plus. Now some slightly longer form questions. How do you take, we used to just say your coffee, but how do you take your morning drink of any kind if you have a morning drink?
Yeah, I do. I actually am not a coffee drinker. I've never been a coffee
Most
drinker.
Of the guests, weirdly, almost like less than half of the guests are coffee drinkers. I've been very surprised by that. Me too, by the way. But yeah, go ahead.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I've never been a coffee drinker, which I feel like I'm proud of myself for getting through architecture school and never having coffee. But I am a tea drinker. So I'll start the morning with either a green tea or I have a chai latte. So I just make myself a little chai latte in the mornings as a little caffeine boost. But I feel like if I were to have a cup of coffee, I'd be bouncing off the walls with the amount of caffeine that I am not used to. So a nice little cup of tea is usually just my go-to for the mornings.
So you'll appreciate this. I'm first of all drinking some lovely matcha right now. And there's two reasons why I never became a coffee drinker. One, and I don't think I've actually mentioned this on the podcast before. One was that when I was a kid, my dad was working 80 to 100 hour weeks all the time. And I saw the moments where he like absolutely needed his coffee and he was not going to be able to function without that. And even though it wasn't like, you know, alcohol or cocaine or anything like that, just seeing that kind of substance dependency was just very like, oh God, I don't ever want to like need something at that level. And then the other thing that happened was I did the summer program at Cornell with our mutual friend, Chris Morse's partners over there, Henry Richardson and everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that was a really cool, you know, introduction to architecture for me. And during that program, Vince and Henry several times were like, Alex, your work is really cool. I like it. You need to stop drinking coffee, though. You're talking way too fast. We don't know anything you're saying. And I'd always be like, I'm not drinking coffee. So I also had that thought, like, if I ever were to start drinking coffee, I would just be totally unintelligible. So I probably shouldn't start.
I mean, I have a question for you then. If you don't drink a tea in the morning, do you get like a headache or anything? Like, are you, do you feel like you might be getting a little bit of caffeine from that, or is it just like it's whatever goes each day?
So I'm very lucky when it comes to, let's just say, chemicals in general. I've never had any kind of addiction or I guess you could say any kind of thing where I have an adverse reaction to not having something. I'm also someone who has never had a hangover before, and this isn't because like I'm very good about knowing my limits and all that. Like, for whatever reason, I very rarely ever get headaches or feel bad at all. And I think I just have to chalk that up to genetics. I don't think I did anything to earn that particular perk.
Amazing. I'm envious.
All right. Next question. What is a book, movie, video game, immersive art installation, any piece of media that was really formative for you when you were younger?
Ooh, this is a great question. And I think that I actually did an exercise like this recently as like a creator and an artist, where to better understand your own style, it can be helpful to take a look at your history and the things that did inspire you over time. So, I did this thing where I kind of bucketed each 5 years of my life to see what things I was really interested in, going back to like when I was five, you know, like what were the colors, the different things, the amount of information I was being drawn to. But I would say something that I was really drawn to, this is in college, was an artist, Tara Donovan. She puts together everyday objects into these huge sculptures that take over a space so that when you walk into the space, you experience this huge art installation, but it's made out of toothpicks or Q-tips or cups, plastic cups. And so I think that that has been something that has stuck with me over time, of this very resourceful way of approaching art with these things that we already have. And this is very far from what I do because this is a real world experience, art experience, but and I'm much more digital and in 3D, but I think that it still applies, that there's just some element of how can I be resourceful when I'm in the engine and or building out a scene and making this beautiful composition out of all of these smaller elements, which is what we're doing when we're in these tools of building out these elements and building out these worlds. But I would say, yeah, that one's not really like tied one to one since it's a more real life art installation, but it comes back to me a lot of like thinking of how it made me feel whenever I was in those spaces. So just like, man, this is so cool.
Yeah, and at least based on social media, it seems like you've been able to maintain a strong connection still to the real world and the real environment and not be stuck too much in digital space. You've made like furniture and things like that, and I admire anyone who can strike that balance between being totally virtual and also being like, sometimes I want to do something with my actual hands.
Yeah, I think it makes a huge difference. It like allows me to be a little more, I guess, efficient when I'm at my computer getting work done, and then whenever I step away to, you know, like you said, build, you do woodworking and build elements and or you use fabrics and stuff to, it just feels so nice to be able to use the other side of my creativity to be able to build something in real life. But yeah, it is hard to do. I do have to remind myself to step away from the computer, but I'm glad that I do.
Yeah, fantastic. And I'll mention one other thing in case it doesn't come up later. One of the first presentations saw you give on behalf of Shop, one of the cooler things there that really struck a chord with me was a facade panel where you guys had actually built out a physical mock-up of the facade and then used AR to kind of extend it further. And I thought that was such a cool way to give people the tactility of like what this facade would be like, but also giving a sense of like, yeah, this is going to cover a whole freaking building. So, you know, you need to understand what it looks like going 1,000 feet in any direction, right?
Yeah, and I think Shop does such a good job at blending the, I guess, like the technology and fabrication side. So, you know, as you're building a building, it's so important to be able to take a look at like some of the mock-ups and some of the real built elements before it gets built, not just in 3D, but have that real life touch and feel to the materials as well. So yeah, Shop does such a great job. And I think that's a good solution for having a smaller mock-up that you can touch, feel the materials, but then expanding it in XR and or however you want to inside of the different engines. But yeah, I was really excited to work with Shop on some of those initiatives.
Super cool. What is your favorite time of day, Sam?
Ooh, I am a morning person. I wake up early. I get a lot of work done. I usually start out with some kind of physical activity and to get going. So very much a morning person. So maybe at this time, 8 or 9. Oh, well, I guess I'm in LA right now, so it's 8 or 9 a.m. for me, and this is my favorite time.
Yeah. What time do you wake up at?
Usually these days I've been waking up at 6, so I feel like that's a reasonable time for me. Sometimes I used to wake up even earlier, but I'm like letting myself sleep a little bit more, so 6 a.m.
I have a lot of admiration for that. Left to my own devices, especially if I don't have meetings the next morning, I will often work until like 4 a.m. and then sleep till, you know, 10 or 11. But I've always felt like it would be so much healthier to swap that a little bit more and get up early, be fresh and start the day off correctly. Because it does feel like when I wake up later in the day, like I've already fallen behind to a certain degree. So yeah, a lot of admiration for your method of doing this. When was a time recently that you remember laughing in a significant way, a belly laugh, as some might say? Could be a joke, could be something you saw in a movie, could be someone slipped on a banana peel. Anything come to mind?
Yeah, I actually was hanging out with some friends on a vacation in December, and there was a ping pong table at the house that we were staying in, and I love ping pong. Shop used to have a ping pong table inside the office. I played a lot growing up. I'm a big ping pong fan. And I was with friends who some of them play, some of them don't. But what we had decided to do, and I don't know if there's a name for this, but it's where if you have four people, you're like running around the ping pong table and hitting it to kind of keep it going. And for some reason, I mean, we probably just haven't done this since we were 12. It was so funny and amusing, and just I was with each kind of effort of once we reached a certain number, I could not stop laughing. That's like one of those things where it's not a joke and everyone else won't think it's funny, but if you it's just like when you get put into these situations of like I haven't done this since I was a kid, like a cartwheel or a handstand or something physical that you haven't done since you were a kid, it just brings a lot of joy. And so I'm like, I should be exploring some of these like childish elements a little bit more. It was just so funny.
I love that. That's really good. Cool. All right. That is it for our word association. So let's do a proper introduction. As already kind of alluded to, you know, I got to know you giving presentations and creating amazing work through Shop. You worked for Epic Games for 3 years. You were also and still are an Unreal Engine authorized instructor. And now you are the founder of Studio Ladder. So I want to give you a moment to, you know, talk about like, how do you generally introduce yourself to people now? How do you like to talk about your journey to getting where you are? The floor is yours, Sam.
Yeah. I will. I'll go ahead and start maybe with the journey first. And that I feel like kind of gives a good understanding of where I'm at today. But as I've already mentioned a few times in this podcast, is I do have an architecture background. I came from architecture, and I'm
UT Austin, so, right?
UT Austin, yeah. Yes. Grew up in Texas, born and raised in Texas, and I really loved architecture. But I always was much more gravitated to the graphics. You can't get a building built unless you know how to present a project and present a building. And so that side of like the visual communication side was always very, very interesting to me. And so I ended up after school going to New York, which is where I met Alex. But I tried architecture for a year, was working on construction documents, knew I did not want to spend the rest of my life doing construction documents, just not my cup of tea. I'm still super close with the architecture firm I worked at, but it was just not my thing. And so this is actually a pretty fun story. I actually ran into someone on the subway who was an architect and was, you know, talking about how I was interested in trying to get back into the architectural visualization space. And they were like, oh, Shop has a position open if you would want to apply. And so I applied, and it was several months later, but I got the job. But I'm just think so fondly of that New York experience of just running into someone on the subway. This was at a time too, when I was fresh to New York and just talking to anyone and everyone on the subway before I learned that you don't do that on the morning commutes. But I was very friendly, a Texan.
So pause there for a second. So because I thought you were going to say like you ran into someone on the subway who you knew from UT Austin or something like that, and they happened to have a shop architect.
This one was stranger? No, this one was a UT person. Okay. But yeah, I would also talk to strangers as well. If I like saw someone a lot on my subway, I'd be like, hey, we take the same subway every day. 10 years later, I no longer do that when I'm on the subway, as I learned that that's not the protocol. But just a fun moment to kind of be able to like meet and see architects. There's always some small world moments. All to say, I ended up getting the job and I spent a lot of time on the research and development side at Shop. So I started learning Unity, Unreal Engine, really kind of testing some of our ideas and initiatives inside of these rendering engines to see how architects can use these rendering engines. I got to speak at an event for an Unreal Engine. I believe it's at Unreal Academy in London, and Epic asked me to come on board afterwards. So after that, it was very bittersweet to leave Shop, but I'm so thankful for all of the people that encouraged me during that time to kind of step out of my zone a little bit and explore something new. But then that's where I was at Epic, teaching, creating. So a lot of the marketing material that came out for Unreal Engine and Twinmotion, I worked on. And then also just being able to teach creators, which is something that's really important to me. And so I have since gone independent. So I created Studio Ladder, as Alex mentioned, and I have a couple of different services that I offer, and that can range from training, actual production work, so creating renderings and visualizations, as well as technical marketing side of things. So I still get to work with Epic. I still get to do architectural visualizations for different architecture companies. And then I also do training on the side and then help out a company ArcVision as well for some of the technical marketing stuff. So helping put on webinars and creating content and just being. I feel I'm very well versed in all the different solutions that architects have for some of the visualization possibilities. So I do my best to assist creators in understanding which tools work best for which workflows. But yeah, that's it's a lot of different things, but you probably feel this as well. Having the wide variety of services allows me to be better at each of them, in my opinion. So I'm working on actual architectural visualizations, and then I'm teaching people how to do them as well, and so that I get to see the problems that people are running into, which is, I think, very important for teachers, for trainers to be able to understand exactly where the bottlenecks are, and not just be, of course, we need to be knowledgeable on the latest content and the latest tools, but also understanding how they work. So, yeah, so that's where I'm at these days, far from the architecture world, but very happy to be where I'm at now. And I just feel very passionate about helping creators, especially anyone new to the Epic ecosystem. It can be daunting. I was they're trying to that was when it was like baking texture, like all these different elements. I just still remember feeling very overwhelmed when I was learning and teaching myself these elements. And so I hope that I can make it easier for anyone who is diving in, because I know it can be overwhelming. And I'm here to say that you can do it, you'll get there, and I hope that I can help people in the process.
Yeah, to brag on your behalf for a moment, Sam, I'll speak to our audience. Sam has a remarkable ability to break down really complex topics in a way that I think still works with that beginner mindset. I know a lot of people, including myself, who after spending so much time in the depths of something like Unreal Engine, it's very easy to gloss over certain things like, oh, we're talking about player pawns and player controllers and game modes, and like we whiz past that. And someone who has no idea what those are is like, wait, hold on, slow down. Like, we need to go over that in more detail. And every time I've seen you speak, Sam, including, you know, the webinar you gave a couple weeks ago and at Unreal Fest and all that, I feel like every word, every sentence you say is so thoughtful and considered. And it's like you've really thought about what impact your words and slides and everything are going to have on someone who is new to this. And I think that goes beyond what a lot of other instructors do. And some of whom, you know, are very talented and can do amazing things, but they can't translate that knowledge as well as you. And I'm just curious to hear a little bit more about like how you go about approaching putting together a webinar or a class, or you know, when you're going to teach someone something, what are some of the things that help you prepare for that?
Yeah, this is such a great question, because I remember when I first started at Epic, I asked a lot of people, how do they approach, creating the tutorials and content? And everyone has a different process, and they welcomed all the different processes, which I think was very nice to kind of come into where there wasn't this, like, you have to do it this way. And so my solution to that is I do write out scripts. I do practice a lot. And I think that for me, something that I try to keep in mind always when I'm talking is how, if I was new to this, would I understand? So I very much try to be very directive with even where my mouse is on the screen of I'm going up here to where this is. And there's learners, there's a bunch of different types of learners. So whether you like to learn from documentation or videos following along, I understand that there are a lot of different sides of ways you can approach that. So I feel like I actually do like to learn from documentation. So I will, you know, whenever I write down a script, I will reread it and kind of even read it in my mind as that documentation. And then it allows me to perform better and do better as I'm speaking. But there are some webinars where I also do them on the fly. And that one's a little bit harder to make sure that I am have a cohesive, consistent way of speaking and under making it easy for everyone to understand. But it has taken a lot of practice and work, but I hope to continue to get better at it. And yeah, I think even asking for feedback also was something that I did a lot in the beginning too, to make sure that I was hitting all of the different elements and really helping creators improve and understand.
Yeah, and I think both of us coming out of architecture school, one of the things that you learn, of course, is how to take feedback constructively and not take it too personally. And I do find that a lot of times people don't necessarily want to hear feedback because they don't want to get their feelings hurt. So just cultivating that ability to like get really good feedback and incorporate it, and also how to separate like, I'm not sure if that's really applicable, but yes, absolutely, I should have spent more time talking about this, or I should have lingered on this slide longer, whatever the feedback might be. That in itself is a really important skill. And some people, I think, never progress further in their ability to teach because they don't have a system for incorporating that well. Would you agree with that?
I do. And yeah, I guess I have the same question for you. You know, I feel like I've always admired you for the energy that you bring and the entertaining element that all of your, whenever I see you speak, it's just, it's very entertaining and fun. And so, yeah, is there any kind of approach that you have just so for even me and any other instructors watching can learn from you as well?
That's a really good question, Sam. I think it is, it's a, obviously a natural enthusiasm because I get really excited about all this tech, and I never thought that I'd be able to find a career where I could utilize all these different passions of mine, architecture and theater and emerging technology. And so the enthusiasm, of course, is very natural. The biggest thing for me, of course, is reining it in. Like I need to slow down because there's so much that I'm trying to get across, and I never feel like I have enough time. Which again is why I admire your like very considerate, like every word feels thought out and precise, and I don't feel like I have that. You mentioned that you feel like a little more nervous when it's a little bit more of like an open tutorial. That's probably where I actually feel the most comfortable. Like if someone just says, "Alex, teach us about swapping game modes between a desktop version and a VR version," like I can go off on that and I can have a ton of fun with that. When I teach, in fact, sometimes the 2 hour courses with Epic are a planned course, and I try to prep for those as much as I can by watching other instructors and taking notes and kind of putting my own spin on it. But the teaching 2 hour sessions I really enjoy are the open Q&As, where it's like very much people just hitting me with like, "Hey, do you know how to, fix this weird lumen bug in an interior environment?" And it's like, "Oh, I'm not sure." But like, I love diving into that kind of problem solving and figuring things out on the fly. Some people find that incredibly obnoxious, but I kind of love the process of trial and error and, going through 50 different ways to approach something and being able to determine like, yeah, this is probably the best method. I'm not sure if that really answers your question, but I guess I'd say that it's not really cultivated as much as it is just a natural enthusiasm and excitement that oftentimes I'm trying to rein in and slow down into something that is more digestible. But it probably, I guess you could say a lot of it does come from my theater background and just loving performing and writing and the whole stage side of everything.
Love that. No, I think that's it's so fascinating to hear how other people approach these problems. Like we probably talk a lot about how people approach building in Unreal Engine, but not about how does one talk about Unreal Engine or teach others or help others. So I think it's super fascinating to hear how other people approach learning and teaching.
Yeah. And as someone who, of course, were you learning Unity and Unreal Engine about the same time, or did you get more grounded in one before the other?
It was about the same time. So it was a time where we were exploring which tools we would use for each solution. And so this was at shop, and we had two different kind of areas we were exploring. So mobile and then VR. And so the mobile we were doing Unity, and for VR we were doing Unreal. And so was doing them at the same time, learning both of them, which there are similarities to them, which made it a little bit easier, but also just a lot of information out there.
Yeah, and what were some of your initial impressions about what it felt like to learn Unity and Unreal? And did you start to figure out like, yeah, I think I like to use Unity more for these kinds of projects and Unreal more for these kinds? What was that like?
Yeah, well, I do not have a coding background, so Unity was a little bit more daunting to me at times, as I would have to take a step back and be like, okay, I need to learn, how programming works and some very fundamental elements that I didn't necessarily need for Unreal Engine. So it felt a little bit easier to dive into Unreal Engine because the visual scripting is just much more approachable to me as someone who comes from more of an artist side. But yeah, I mean, our friend Chris Morse and Adam Chernick were a part of my team during that time and were incredibly helpful in kind of where we were getting our resources and who's taking on what roles and who's focusing on what elements of as we're learning these tools. And so that was very helpful too, to have such a great team to kind of bounce off, like, oh, I'm struggling with this. With this, how about I focus on this in Unreal, and you're focusing on this part? So there was kind of a nice way for us all to grow and evolve in our engines. And now I would say Adam's an expert in Unity, and I kind of went much more down the Unreal Engine route. So it's fun to see where we kind of ended up.
Yeah, I watched one of Adam's, might have been from last year, at Unite Copenhagen, like Unity's version of Unreal Fest, and I had a similar thought, like, okay, so Adam like really went hard down the Unity side, and we're over here playing in our Unreal Engine sandbox. How do you determine when to do something in Unreal Engine versus Twinmotion? We actually haven't talked a ton about Twinmotion on the podcast, but yeah, of course, it's a program that's made more for AEC and the ArcViz industry. So yeah, what are some of your thoughts on like when that makes sense versus the much more custom version, which would be Unreal?
Yeah, I think this is such an important question and such a good opportunity to share Twinmotion with the Unreal Engine world. When I go to Unreal Fest, a lot of the times I do meet people who are new to Unreal Engine. They're trying to learn Unreal Engine, and when I ask, oh, what are your goals for the engine? A lot of them can be accomplished inside of Twinmotion, and Twinmotion is just such more of a digestible,
Oh, yeah.
easy to learn tool. And I think that it can even set you up for success in Unreal Engine if you start there first, because you do have the ability to bring your Twinmotion project into Unreal Engine. And so I think that this is a super important question. And so I think the deciding of like when to use Twinmotion versus when to use Unreal Engine, for me, I do think a lot about it before I start projects. So if the end goal are just images and videos, I will typically use Twinmotion. So Twinmotion allows me to create those visuals very quickly. So for instance, some of the architecture firms that I am working for, I'll like step in, I'll help make a visualization, and then pass it back off to them so that they can continue to edit it in the future if they like. And what's nice is Twinmotion will allow other people to jump in if they don't have knowledge of the tool. So I am not, building out this huge Unreal Engine model that they'll never be able to touch in the future if they need it. And so that's one of the ways that I work with my clients. I, of course, still do visualizations inside of Unreal Engine. The ones that are, I would say, bigger scale and where I need to take advantage of Nanite, I do use Unreal Engine. Hopefully that will start to come into Twinmotion. So there's just a few different elements of Unreal Engine that are not quite in Twinmotion yet. But to kind of further talk about Twinmotion is it's actually built inside of Unreal Engine. So it gets to use the technology that Unreal Engine has. It might just take a year or so to kind of get all of those fine-tuned into Twinmotion in a way that's approachable and easy to use by users in Twinmotion. So a lot of times I do get a lot of questions of like, can you do this? Can you do that in Twinmotion? And sometimes the answer is no. So I'm trying to think of an example now. So like some of the AR elements you can't do AR in Twinmotion.
But
But
there is some VR.
there is some VR. Yeah, there is some VR, which is nice. There is also for instance, pixel streaming is a little bit easier in Twinmotion. It has Twinmotion Cloud that's set up ready to go. Whereas for someone trying to get pixel streaming set up in Unreal Engine, it's going to take a little bit more expertise, where Twinmotion is very, very easy to get that going in Twinmotion Cloud. But Twinmotion is getting a lot new tools, a lot new. That's not even, I'm not speaking correctly. But they are getting some new features such as configurations that are going to take some of the Unreal Engine elements and bring them into Twinmotion in an easy to use way. So all to say, I typically like to start just in Twinmotion, and then I'm like, if I need a more robust approach, I'll go into Unreal Engine. And it also just depends on the client as well. But I do want to say that, Twinmotion gets, I guess, classified sometimes as an architecture tool, which it is. It was started by architects, as a visualization tool by architects for architects, but it has truly evolved in so many ways. So I would say it's not just for architecture. If you are exploring Unreal Engine, or even if you just want to be smart about how you're using the Epic tool set, then it might take a moment. Like if you know Unreal Engine, you will probably pick up Twinmotion in 30 minutes. And maybe it's just easier for you to get out a storyline in Twinmotion in a few hours versus building up a whole world and setting up a bunch of different cameras and setting up all the different, movie render queue elements to export something like that. You can do in a fraction of the time in Twinmotion. And so I've worked with a lot of set designers, automotive, fashion. Like there are so many different creators who can take advantage of the tool. And so I do want to just push that out there for anyone. Even if you're an avid Unreal Engine user, if you're looking to speed up workflows, it might be worth considering, hey, what's this Twinmotion tool? Should we be using it for this portion of our protocol or workflows? And then transfer that into Unreal Engine when you need the Unreal Engine features.
Yeah. And I'd love you to talk a little more too about what the process right now is like for bringing Twinmotion projects over to Unreal Engine. The last time that I had played with it was when Ken Pimental was still at Epic Games and kind of figuring out that plugin workflow. And so like it was a little bit rough. There were a lot of things that didn't translate over. In your impression, has that become smoother, or is it still a little bit of a rough road?
Yeah, no, it's become much smoother. There are some elements that are still not able to be transferred. So I'll talk about that in just a moment. But you used to have to download multiple plugins on the Epic Launcher. And then, like, there were like a couple of steps that you had to do. But now in Twinmotion 2025 or 2024.2, you can save it directly to an Unreal Engine folder, and then you'll be able to open it up. So there is still a few steps in which there still is like a Twinmotion plugin, but you don't have to kind of walk through all the steps that you used to. And I would say that that's continuing to evolve each time, but this is the kind of smoothest process that it's been. So if you open up Twinmotion, you'll see that there is a as export to it's not called export to Unreal. I should know the name of the line, but there's a option for you to save it inside of an Unreal Engine project, and it will open up.
Very cool. So you're already, I'd say, doing a fantastic job of evangelizing and talking about Unreal Engine and Twinmotion and all that. I'd love to talk briefly with whatever we're allowed to about your time working at Epic Games. You were a senior technical marketing manager. I think that's the right term. Did I get that right?
Correct,
Senior
yes.
technical marketing manager, yes. And so what was it like being there? Were you mostly remote? Were you on site? Were you more in Twinmotion? Were you more on Unreal Engine? How did you find the culture? Again, just want to take the opportunity because we've never had an Epic employee on the podcast before to hear whatever thoughts you want to offer on that experience.
Yeah, no, it was such a great time. I really, really admire everyone that I worked with. And I worked remotely, and I worked, I would say, about half on Unreal Engine, half on Twinmotion. So it'd all kind of be structured around the releases for the new tools. So, it'd be like, okay, this, like for some of the inventory here that we're seeing here that I worked on, it'd be like, okay, Unreal Engine 4.27 is coming out. We need, to showcase the new features. What are we going to do to build that? And I loved it because it gave me some creative freedom to create a lot of these images. I have architecture expertise. I have spent years, building and working with these buildings, so I could bring that side of my expertise to the project and know that, oh, well, this is relatable to architects or isn't relatable to architects, from that side of thing, but also just making sure that whenever I create a tutorial, that the screen is like a canvas, so it's like an artwork, so that I'm thinking about the composition of the screen as I am doing a recording of something, so that not only is it informational, but it can also be beautiful. And so that was something that I really enjoyed about my time there, was that I got to utilize some of the kind of artistic skills as well as some of the other skills that I was learning and practicing, which is the speaking and teaching elements. And so, yeah, both the Twinmotion teams and Unreal Engine teams were great. It was very much, as you probably have explored on more of the new technology, is I'm developing and teaching this content for other people, but there's not really anything that exists to teach me. So it was very much like, I got to figure out how to work this ML deformer, and like, how is the cloth simulator working? A lot of testing and exploring, and being able to speak to engineers at times to see, how to debug something if I'm not getting it to work correctly, and that's very helpful for them as well, since it's like a one-to-one beta user of like, okay, this is what I ran into. So yeah, that was just really a nice opportunity to get to showcase the tools to the users, and then also for the users to get to make sure that they're able to take advantage of the tools in an easy way. So yeah, I think that's, I obviously also went to a lot of events, which I always got to see you at as well. So got to, I would usually do either a lecture or a class that I would teach as well. And yeah, it was just such a very special time. And like I said, everyone at Epic is very enthusiastic and I think inspired by the tool, and feel very strongly that the tool has a lot of excitement and can help creators. And so there was just a lot of passion there that I enjoy.
Yeah. I don't know if this is secret, so to say, but like I know right now there's like a big thing happening in North Carolina at Epic's HQ. And it seems to happen every year, every 6 months. I don't know. But it seems like there are times when a lot of the even remote employees do kind of congregate at headquarters. Was that something you were a part of? And is that more about just like we're going to go through some workshops, we're going to go through the roadmap? Like, what's your impression of when it made sense to bring remote employees to an actual location?
So I actually wasn't involved in some of those, so I'm sorry I don't have the in-house details for you. But there were elements and moments where I got to meet with the Twinmotion team, which we would all get together and kind of talk about, the future of Twinmotion, and brainstorm and improve and make, hear everyone's voices. And so that was always a very nice element. But no, I don't have too much information on the carry gatherings. I've actually Never been to Cary, which is very funny. Of all the time that I worked there, I never went, but I went to a lot of other really amazing places, Australia and different elements for some of the Unreal Fest. So I cannot complain. But I know vaguely of what you're speaking about, but have not been. So I'm sorry, I don't have any of the good gossip.
That's quite all right. Now, one thing we've been meaning to get Luke and Sarah and the whole Pixel streaming team there from TensorWorks on the podcast. And one of the things we wanted to talk about was what the Unreal Fest over in the Gold Coast in Australia is like. As someone who's been to that, how would you compare, or let's broaden this out to the various Unreal Fests in different locations. How do you compare them to each other? And what did you think, for example, of the Australia edition?
Good question. If anyone is wanting to travel to Australia and wants to like time it with the Unreal Fest so that you can go, I would highly encourage you. I mean, it's the one that I went to was right on like a block from the water. And so it was just so nice to be able to take a break or take lunch out and walk along the beach if you needed a moment from being in the kind of like indoor conference the entire time. It's a much smaller ordeal than the Unreal Fest that we know here in the US. And so it felt more intimate as well, which is sometimes nice. It means that you can, it's sometimes easier to meet people when you are seeing the same person at lunch and in the lectures. So that was kind of nice that it made it a little bit easier way of meeting people. They also had this, I think because Unreal Fest is bigger, they may not have this at the US one, but at the Gold Coast one I went to, after you speak, you would go up to this room where I guess it was like the developer hub, and people could come and ask questions directly to the speaker. So I think there's some element of that at Unreal Fest where you can step outside, but that was really wonderful. I feel like I would get into like an hour conversation after one of my talks of just being able to talk to people who wanted to be able to ask questions, and there were computers there to where we could actually like be like, oh, good question, let me open up. Let me open that up on this computer and show you. So that was something that was really special, of that kind of comes out of that more intimate setting. But yeah, I'm not sure what it's going to be like this year because it seems like there's some changing of timing. So yeah, the Orlando one will be big and exciting. So I'm not sure. I don't even know what the I forget what the schedule is of like whether or not there will be a Gold Coast one this year, but I hope so. The Australia team is wonderful at Epic. So encourage if you're in Australia, Alex, if you got a lot of Australians listening to this, I would love that. But that would be, I think, a wonderful learning opportunity for anyone who wants to dive in more to Unreal.
Some people have a dream of following a band around the world. I think there is this part of me that would love someday to literally just follow like all the Unreal Fests around the world, especially on the Asia side, because of course in past years there's been like Unreal Fest Gold Coast in Australia. There's been ones in Singapore and Seoul and Tokyo and Shanghai, and like the idea of just being able to kind of go through to all of those would be amazing. But also the timing would need to line up where that actually makes sense. But I know there have been some folks like Chris Murphy who I think have done things similar to that in the past.
Yeah, no, I would like almost. I know last year they had the what is it called, where you check like a bucket list almost. They had it at the Unreal Fest so that like when you go to different things, you can check that off. But yeah, Alex, you need like a Unreal Engine or I guess Unreal Fest bucket list that you can start checking off.
That would be really fun. Yeah, so far I've only got Unreal Fest Europe in Prague, and then of course New Orleans and Seattle, and then Unreal Day, which was like a pseudo Unreal Fest thing in Belgrade. That was really fun, and I think you would be a wonderful guest to have there if they do it again, especially because of all the opportunities to hang out with the Three Lateral team and all the MetaHuman stuff over there, which is just such a blast. Like it's such an incredibly smart, like best in class in the world group of folks over there. Speaking of the Unreal Fest stuff, yeah, so my understanding is that, because you alluded to this switch, and I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast yet, that of course typically Unreal Fest would be more in the fall, like September, October, and that would be the big one in North America, and then there'd be all these smaller editions around the world before that. Now, this year, it's going to be, I think, June 2nd to 5th in Orlando. That's the big one. I think it's been announced, but I won't say it just in case it hasn't been. There definitely is going to be an Unreal Fest Europe, somewhere in Europe, in September. So they're at least switching those. I think, as Sam also said, we're not sure how many of the other Unreal Fests will be happening yet. But my understanding, and this is public information, there was like an article about it, that Epic is trying to kind of get fewer amazing announcements at GDC, where they've typically been known to have like, oh, here's MetaHumans and whatever. And they want to push that more into their own event, which of course is Unreal Fest. And I think that's some of the logic of pushing it forward. But then also, it would seem like having this event specifically in Orlando is part of this new Disney partnership and this large stake that Disney now has in Epic Games, which, by the way, I keep hoping that because Disney has such a big stake in Epic Games and Apple, that Disney's going to be a bit of a marriage counselor and like get Epic and Apple to work out their differences. It hasn't happened yet, but that's what I'm hoping for. But yeah, like just to drill in a little bit more on the Orlando thing, like, are you going to go? What do you think that's going to be like? Have you been to conferences in Orlando in summer? Is it going to be terrible? Or yeah, what are your thoughts on what that'll be like?
Good question. I'm from Texas and grew up with a lot of heat, so the heat never bothers me. I'm always accepting of the heat, but I actually haven't been to any conferences in Orlando. I've of course been to, or not of course, but I have been lucky enough to be gone to Disney World, and so I've had that experience. And so I also am very curious of whether there will be any blending of the two, and I would be excited to hear that and see that. But yeah, I think, you know, each venue has been so exciting. Like the, you know, Seattle, I loved, like even on the architecture side, I thought the building was really well done, that the conference was in, just like a lot of natural light coming in, a lot of beautiful notes. I don't know if you noticed this, but in the main room, wherever the main talks were, if you looked up, there were a bunch of like things hitting the ceiling and producing like scattered light. And they were all single planks of wood that were attached to the ceiling. So there was like hundreds of wood planks that were making up the ceiling element. And it was just like, unless you like really studied it, you wouldn't have like been like, oh, those are just like full planks of wood. But it was just an amazing thing to kind of see, especially with the, you know, the epic colors, the kind of like the purple, the blue, the greens, like kind of flashing up. They were really amazing. And, you know, same thing with New Orleans. The New Orleans ones always had the parades that were very, very exciting. And so I am hoping to go to Unreal Fest. I'm not sure if I'll be, you know, hopefully I'll be able to do some talks and or, you know, a classroom element. So I've got my fingers crossed for that. So hopefully that happens and I'll be able to go. But yeah, I'll be excited to see. Like, it feels like it's going to be a, you know, bigger and better. And the team that puts on all of the Unreal Fest, they're all truly wonderful. And I'm always so impressed with them, how they pull everything together. And so I would be honored to be a part of the event and to hopefully meet anyone who's listening to this. Like, I'm always like, please come say hi. I love to hear everyone's stories of how they got into Unreal Engine, how they're approaching different problems and what their solutions are. So I think it's such a great opportunity. And even for people who are in Unreal Engine and, you know, seeking jobs as well, you know, I think sometimes it can be daunting of like, what are the networking opportunities? Where are you going to spend your money to, you know, kind of build some of those relationships? And I would say that Unreal Engine is one of those networking, or sorry, Unreal Fest is one of those networking elements that I would encourage, because I do feel like I genuinely see people connecting and helping each other out, whether it's looking for talent or someone who is talent who needs some opportunities. So Yeah, Alex, I'm guessing you're going. It sounds like you're like signed up, ready to go, all good.
Yeah, definitely going to go. Probably, even if I'm not giving a big stage talk, I will very likely be giving a learning lab. And I actually wanted to ask Sam, have you ever considered doing a learning lab? The thing that I always struggle with, of course, is they're the only things at Unreal Fest that aren't recorded. And you get to do a live session with 30 people in the room. And that's cool. But it also, I'm always like, oh, I want this stuff to be available to as many people as possible. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a. I've actually done a learning lab. I think a few years ago I did a learning lab, and it was one of the very beginning ones. So I really felt for it was a twin mission to Unreal Engine, and there was a very wide range of expertise coming into the talk. So mine was a little more elementary of, here are the kind of basics and getting started. And I know I definitely had some Unreal Engine pros in there that were like jumping around and building their own stuff. So I think that there's been some advancements to the scheduling. So like, what level the learning lab will be taught at, so that you as a consumer of the information can make sure that you're being efficient with your time. But yeah, I haven't done one in a few years, so maybe I should explore that. I totally understand I would say almost missed opportunity of that it's not recorded, because then it doesn't mean that other people are able to take advantage of it. And yeah, I feel like there's definitely a difference for like approaching the two of like just the pace at which they're done compared, because it's more of like a follow along. So I definitely get why that's done, but I feel like did you record one on your own 1 year, or am I making that up?
Well, you might be thinking, well, let's see, what could you be thinking of? I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is for Unreal Fest 2022, I was asked to do a learning lab about a VR course that I had designed for Epic. And I was like, cool, will it be recorded? And I was thinking, like, there's such a dearth of VR content available from Epic Games, and Victor Brodin and the team who run this are amazing, but of course they're stretched very thin. And so there aren't as many updates to the VR elements of what Unreal Engine can offer compared to, say, virtual production, which is getting a lot more attention. So what I had insisted upon when they asked me to do a learning lab on VR was I said, I really want this to be available for the broader public. There's such a hunger for this content. So I was given permission to convert that 2-hour learning lab into a 2-hour talk, which also ended up being very awkward because there ended up being like a lunch break in the middle, and then we came back and like finished it off. But that's the closest thing I've done to like doing a public version of what should have been a learning lab.
Gotcha. Okay, that's maybe what I'm confusing it with. But it sounds like do you enjoy the learning labs more than some of the other like traditional lecture type talks?
I mean, I really like the practical hands-on knowledge. Like the thing, and I'm not gonna point any fingers, but like the thing that is always tricky with the speakers at Unreal Fest is you do end up with some people who are really just there to show off. They're there to be like, look at our cool company, look at our awesome portfolio. And it feels like the goal of the talk is to be like, that's a cool company. I sure do wish I worked for them or whatever. But my favorite talks are definitely the ones where there is like practical insight, knowledge, especially folks who want to give you like a breakdown of like, here's a bunch of like roadblocks we hit. Like we were having all these issues with Nanite or Loon or World Partition, and here's the ways we solved them. Like anyone who's really willing to dive into solving problems, because I think the one of the biggest problems with Unreal Engine in general is like, things are going to crash. Things are going to break. And if you feel like it's only happening to you and everyone else just has this stuff figured out, you're going to get discouraged and you're going to quit. And I think you and I are both the kind of people who want more people in this ecosystem. We want to encourage people. And part of that is letting them know that you're not alone. Like we all run into weird bugs and things that aren't working the way they're supposed to, and helping them build up the fortitude and the methods to get around that. So to answer your question, like what I like about the learning labs, I guess, is that it's almost always like very practical hands-on knowledge, and things go wrong during the class. Like you are responding in real time to someone raising their hand and saying, every time I try to do that thing you just asked me to do, Unreal Engine crashes. And you give everyone in the class the benefit of working through that and trying to solve it. So I do wish those were more public and more recorded. But, you know, it's just a shame again that, yeah, it's a smaller audience. And you can obviously do a larger talk on a bigger stage and get that out to a much larger audience. Like I felt very lucky that I was able to give this talk that I called I Wish I Learned This Sooner at Unreal Fest Prague last year. And that absolutely could have been a learning lab, because it's basically just like, here's a bunch of crazy quick tips inside Unreal Engine that in a learning lab setting would also lead to like having people saying like, oh, it's not quite working for me the way that I expected it to. But I preferred giving that as a stage talk, because now it's on the Unreal Engine YouTube channel. And of course, you know, 1,000 times the number of people have been able to see that compared to who could have seen that if it was a learning lab.
Yeah, Alex, I have a question for you. You know, like you're saying, yeah, things I wish I would have learned earlier. How do you learn how do you approach learning new things? Because I know that you work on a lot of different elements, and I know you know, you've got a team. And so I'm curious of like, how do you stay on top of it? Are you reading the release notes for each of them and like diving into all the features, or are you just taking them as they come of like, oh, I have a project, let's bring it into 5.5 and run into the problems there, or yeah, do you watch YouTube videos? What's your kind of preferred method for learning?
Sam, you should really have your own podcast, because you are very good at interviewing and asking questions. And I don't think anyone's ever asked me that in particular. My learning style is very much like dive in and mess around and see what happens. And so when there's a new version of Unreal Engine, a lot of times the first thing I'll do is I'll download the newest version of like the content examples and the city sample and like whatever things, anything that I can just kind of jump into. And if it's something I'm familiar with, like the city sample that I've been looking at ever since, you know, Unreal Engine 5.1 or 5.2, or the Electric Dream sample or the Hillside sample, which I know you worked on as well. And like, those are all such great starting points for seeing kind of an apples to apples comparison for what's new and what's different. And is this crash fixed? Can I now use high quality translucent reflections from Lumen in VR without it causing issues? And can I bring all the fireflies down? Like, I always kind of have these things in the back of my head that I'm looking for specifically as improvements, but it's also really fun just to mess around. My learning style came very much from, I had this kind of click moment with my dad, who was a musician for most of his life, or he's still alive. Like, I don't know why he's still playing music. He's like touring Florida all the time, still playing music. But when I started to learn guitar, I have a brother who is like such a natural musician. My dad's a natural musician. And I assumed from a very young age, like they just had those genes and I didn't. And what my dad taught me, which ended up applying to everything I learned, is he's like, you got to start with something that you actually want to learn, and you need to start small. And so rather than just learning like scales on guitar, which, you know, is like what you would typically do in, as part of like music lessons, and I had piano lessons for years that went nowhere because it was a little bit too like rote memorization and you just have to practice these things and build up muscle memory. It wasn't giving me the kind of energy or passion that I needed. So my dad was like, hey, here's a song you want to learn. Let's learn the three chords, like the simplest way to play that one song. And then from there, it really just became this gradual, like, okay, well, you know, now you know power chords, and like power chords you can play 1,000 songs with. And here's like a really simple finger picking method, and now you can play Dust in the Wind or whatever, Don't Fear the Reaper, and like kind of move up from there. And so I had this kind of gradual progression with guitar where like I would keep learning something that was just a little bit more complicated than what I had previously learned. And I felt that joy of getting better and better and better. And specifically learning the songs that I want to learn, and eventually, you know, writing songs and having a comedy band and all that fun stuff. But similarly, when it comes to approaching something like Unreal Engine, there needs to be something I'm very excited about. I can't go into an abstract, empty map and just start building blueprints from nothing. Like, I want to start with a really robust game sample. Like, let's dive into the Lyra multiplayer project and like tweak things and change things and adjust things and like see how that affects the game. And I like to treat everything kind of like a sandbox that way. So that's always been my learning style. Very hands-on, very trial and error. That didn't work. That did something unexpected. Let's explore that further. And it's kind of just a big wildfire of creativity, as one of my architecture professors referred to one of my projects once upon a time. But it's a very satisfying way to go about things. And it is what lends itself sometimes to me, like diving into something at 9 p.m. and then suddenly realizing it's 4 a.m. and I really need to get some sleep because I have a 6 a.m. call with, you know, Japan or something. So again, I have so much admiration for you, Sam, because everything about you feels so thought out and planned, and like you've got it all. It feels, from an outside perspective, it feels like you have everything figured out. And for me, my whole life is like having fun, but in the most chaotic way you could possibly imagine.
Well, no, I love that. I think it's so important for creators who might be, listening to this to hear and see that, there are completely different ways that you can approach the tool. And I think that's a good reminder even for myself of like, if I'm struggling with something, just opening up one of the content examples. And I do it sometimes. I do it if I'm like, oh, I know I need to add this element. I'm going to go grab or like learn from the content examples, but I probably don't just like start exploring there instead of the kind of, oh, I'm going to open up 5.5 on a blank screen and then see all the changes and like, test out the changes. Whereas you're like, I'm going to open up something that exists and I'm going to play around and I'm going to see like how it's all working. Because you're totally right. Like, especially as, these new projects go out, there's like all these engineers and developers who work to build it to make it work with the latest tools. So that's such a good reminder of like, that's a great place to learn. And I do talk a lot about Hillside, but that there's all these other tools among the Epic ecosystem to learn from that is a good reminder for myself to go explore those too. Some of those ones that are not architecture based, because we can always learn from other industries, which I think is one of the huge benefits of working inside of Unreal Engine.
Yeah, 100%. Sam, with some of the time we have left, I should have checked with you before we started this, but do you have by any chance a project that's kind of like open and ready to go that you could share to give people a little bit more of a sense of what you get up to?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I have something pulled up, and I had Twinmotion and Unreal Engine pulled up, but I will probably just close out of the Twinmotion one so I can have more power on my computer. So I will, let's see. I'm going to put something on here. So are you able to see my screen here?
Yep. And okay, for our audio only listeners, Sam, do you want to describe a little bit of what we're looking at?
Absolutely. I'm going to close out of my Twinmotion project as well, just so I can get full power for my project. Yeah. So for anyone who is listening and unfortunately unable to see this element, but I do have a project pulled up that I've worked on. It's a master plan project. So it is an architecture project. It is a project that's based in Chicago. There are a lot of different elements as far as people and trees and a lot of different projects that have built into the scene. I do have this project up on my website as well if you wanted to check it out at studioladder.com. But give me a moment because it looks like my mouse is frozen, but here we go. Okay, so I'm running, like recording, streaming, doing a lot of different elements here. But one of the things that I was very proud and excited to work on this project. This is a project that's done by Rios, which is an architecture firm that has several different locations throughout the US and I think internationally as well. But I worked with the LA team here in LA, and we were working for the United Center. So this is where the Chicago Bulls play. There is a new plan to develop the surrounding area, so taking some of the parking lots and really bringing life to them. So you can see kind of we have a lot more parks, a lot more buildings that are going to be incorporated or with the parks on top. And so this one I did do in Unreal Engine. You'll see that I did kind of fake a few things of some of the backdrops. So on my screen, I do have some photographs that I took and made into PNGs and brought them in, as opposed to using a tool like Cesium for this. The very first kind of turnover for this project was very quick. And so we needed something nice and quick to use. So I just worked with some of the background images. So you can see that, this I have one where you can kind of see it down the road, which works fine for what it where it's needed. But the nice thing about this was I was able to kind of get on calls. We could, you know, take a look at the model, take different views, so I could really like pan around and explore different views. I also was able to take this and do animations for the team as well. So this is, you know, one of those things where I probably could have done this in Twinmotion, but I think with the amount of geometry that I was bringing in, I wanted to utilize Nanite. And so that's what I did for this project. So I did also use the foliage tool for a lot of the entourage here so that I could kind of easily turn it off and on and navigate throughout the scene. So here I'll just, I have some Twinmotion characters here that I used as well. They wanted a little band element. So I think my screen might be frozen right now. So we'll see if we get it back up and running here. But this was such a fun project to be able to kind of build out all of the different elements and, you know, have food trucks, which will look more entertaining once I get the, once it is not frozen. But yeah, Alex, this is a great example of like, there's always going to be a live something going on here whenever you go live. Yeah, this is also just like a big project. So,
Sam, this might also be an opportunity to talk briefly about if you have a really heavy project and maybe for whatever reason, your computer is being taxed, what are some strategies you have for still navigating the editor, but maybe, you know, bringing down some of the settings to make it more efficient to get around in?
Yeah. So yeah, there's a couple of different options that I do. So there is this, if you go up to settings on the right hand side of your screen, there is an engine scalability settings. So this is automatically set to Epic. You can always change these down. So these large groups, you can change from to low, medium, high, and I'll just do that on my computer real quick, and you'll kind of see the difference in quality. And this is, you know, one of the easiest ways to be able to like work, navigate. So of course, like you probably. And be able to, and still thinking about some shaders. I haven't opened this project in a while, but it allows me
And of course, it's worth letting people know too, that when you cross that barrier from, I think high to scalability, low and medium, it does often need to recompile shaders. So that's something
okay.
I'm aware of.
See, learning something new myself. So yeah, that's kind of one of the elements that I will do. As I mentioned, I'll also turn off my kind of foliage to quickly build throughout. And there's a couple of different elements you can do as well, such as some of like the screen percentage you can change and a few other elements. But I would say that I mostly work with scalability. Alex, what about you? Or is there something that you like to use that is your kind of go-to for when the project is big and you need to easily move around?
So Alex Morrow, so I believe is also actually a former Epic Games employee. We were at a hackathon together last April for Meta, and he pointed out that if the editor is being upset, a really good CVAR to use is t.maxfps and then change it to like 15 or 30. And that will also limit the frame rate specifically inside the editor. Now, I knew about this as a CVAR to use for like a packaged game, and it had never occurred to me to actually use this for the editor. And that will also, you know, keep things from like overheating and all that.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. So that it's like maxing it out, so then it's not like over compiling everything.
And then of course the other one would be to change the view mode. So you're doing like unlit mode or lighting only or wireframe or something that isn't giving the full, you know, deferred rendering pass.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, that's a great tip as well. But yeah, I feel like, you know, there's not much to the scene.
How long did it take this whole thing together, Sam?
Yeah, I would say I had the images done in about 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So It was a lot of work in that 2 weeks to build everything out, and that kind of includes, comments and everything, getting that back. But then the animations did take more time because it did take to set up the cameras. There's still some like flickering, but there was, a deadline. It was a rush job in which I needed to get out some visuals and animations quickly for that. But yeah, I think this also shows the power of Unreal Engine of like, I don't know, I traditionally I was doing 3ds Max and V-Ray, and so this is like so fun to see that this is what we're seeing in screen, but even diving into some of the path tracer elements like for fine-tuned images is amazing. And honestly, all the animations I did were just the raster rendering so that it could be produced pretty quickly. So yeah, I would say the animations was probably more on like 3 weeks to 4 weeks, whereas the visuals was about 2 weeks to kind of build everything out.
Yeah, amazing. This is absolutely one of those projects where people would assume that there was a team of like 100 people working on it. So the fact that you put this together on your own is pretty amazing. You mentioned Nanite is a part of this. Is it also using Lumen, virtual shadow maps, world partition, any of those other, bleeding edge UE5 features?
Yeah. So it uses Nanite, Lumen, virtual shadow maps. I am not using world partition. World partition, I actually haven't explored that much. I know that it takes a little bit more additional time to set up. So sometimes whenever I have this very quick project where we're not needing to kind of jump from one area to another, like I know it's a big project, but it's still pretty concise, in the world that I didn't use it and haven't used it. But I did, speaking of some of the other, some of the other projects that Unreal Engine put out, I did use a lot of the hillside elements for this project, which was nice too. Like some of the sky elements I used and some of the decals I brought in from that hillside project. And you'll see, kind of just place some different Quixel assets in here as well. So a lot of the people come from Twinmotion. So I brought in the Twinmotion characters, which was nice. I'm trying to think if there's any other like kind of newer technologies that I used within this, but I think the Lumen and Nanite were what I was wanting to take advantage of with this versus using Twinmotion. So that's where I kind
So
of
I don't want to crash your system, but if you were to use like I think it's Control L, could you actually move the sun right now and change the time of day?
Oh. See. This I haven't actually, I've never used this. What
Oh
is this
yeah, so
control
if you
L?
hold down Control
Oh
L and
my
then you move your
gosh.
mouse, it'll take whatever the directional light is as the sun, and then you can just move the mouse to change the sun.
Okay, so see, I love this. I'm learning something new, but I'm doing the L, control L. I see the gizmo. I'm moving
Yeah,
my mouse, but
that's weird.
nothing's moving. I have this sun sky system of
I might be missing a key there. There might be a shift involved or something. But if you change, because you're using the sun sky system. Yeah, this only works
Yeah.
with a standard directional light. But yeah, and for those who don't
Okay.
know, the sun sky is a great blueprint for if you're actually trying to locate the sun at a real, latitude and longitude and do a whole solar study correctly.
Yeah, and I will add on to that so this project I don't have an Unreal Engine 5.5, but in Unreal Engine 5.5 there is a day sequencer plugin that is
Excellent.
now native in Unreal Engine. You just need to turn it on by going to edit plugin. So this, I'm not in 5.5, but I could type in day sequencer here and add it. And it's a pretty cool system. So it is kind of the next level of sun sky system, but it's especially great for anyone who has a nighttime scene as well, or wants to kind of go from day to night. They've got stars, they've got the moon in there. It's like all built out for you. So I would highly encourage you to do that as well. If you're like here, I have, I do have like the north offset. I can, put in time of day and month, but that one takes it to the next level of just having a few more elements that are like baked in so that you can add in like the stars and stuff. Because once I go dark here, I have auto exposure on, so
Right,
it
it'll
may not
brighten.
fully go dark, but there's nothing in
Oh,
the sky.
beautiful.
But for the day sky sequence tool, you are able to work with moon and stars, which I think really can take your project to the next level.
Yeah. Sam, what's a dream project for you? I mean, this is obviously an amazing one here, but if you imagine yourself in 5 to 10 years, what's something that would be a really cool, you know, thing for you to be up to?
Yeah, I love this question. And I've actually been watching Severance recently and some of the Apple TV, like Pachinko, and the opening, the Pachinko's not in 3D, but the opening scene credits for those TV shows are amazing, especially Severance. I don't think they're using Unreal Engine on that. I'm not sure exactly what's being used for that, but I do love that. And that's so far from architecture, I know, but even watched The Brutalist recently and there's the graphics for the opening and closed scenes are just really different and innovative. And I think that that is something that one day I would love to do, is to work on one of those like opening closing scenes for a TV show or movie or something. So very far from architecture, but I think that's what's so cool about Unreal Engine, is that there are so many cross industry opportunities. And so whether it's fashion or automotive or film, media and entertainment world, I know that this skill set will help me explore some of those industries, or I hope to explore some of those industries, and be able to provide the knowledge and skill set that I have here to be able to put in something like that. But yeah, some of those opening show credits are just so cool. I would love to work on one of those.
I love that. We're putting it out into the universe. Hopefully in 5 years, we'll get to have Sam back and we can talk about, you know, the work she did on Severance season 6 or whatever. That'd be really cool.
I would
cool.
love that.
Yeah. All right. With the time we have left, I want to give you a chance to give any shout outs you want to for anyone anywhere in the world that's had a major impact on your career, your life, your learning, because we'd like to just, you know, say thank you to people. Anyone come to mind?
Yeah. I mean, I think this is such a good opportunity, and I will kind of dive into two people that I talked about earlier today with, you know, Chris Morse and Adam Chernick. They were two people who were so just supportive during a time where, you know, where I'm learning these new tools, and also supportive for me in my career to reach for the stars and to, you know, explore the role at Epic, explore what else there is out there beyond the architecture scope. And they just provided me so much knowledge in the rendering engines as well. So as you know, as I was like learning and teaching, they were always a great resource where I could go to them and be like, hey, I'm trying to do this thing. This is what I've learned so far. Can you help like connect the dots here? And they were so helpful for that. And so I'm so appreciative to them in my life. And I love that you know them as well. And I think they're truly incredible. So I'm so happy that our paths cross, I guess. Yeah, many, many years ago now. But I know that we'll probably continue to be in each other's radars as we kind of go in and out of all the different realms of AR, XR, rendering engines, tech, architecture. So it's kind of like an interesting little crew we got here in different parts of the industry.
It's a really cool community. And again, Sam, I'm so happy and thrilled for your success. The very first time I saw you speak, my takeaway was just like, more of this, like, I want more of this out in the world. And so the fact that you've been able to become a much more well-known educator, speaker, et cetera, has been a real delight. And I think you're just a great role model for anyone who's trying to find their way in this industry. So I hope a few folks listening to today's podcast have been inspired. And if anyone wants to reach out to you, Sam, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn. That's probably the easiest way to find me. And I try to be very responsive there in the direct messages. So I would say feel free to find me there, add me there. And yeah, I also want to, you know, as Alex was very supportive of me since the first day that we met, and I hope to instill the same support to people in the future who are looking to get into this world. So feel free to message me. As I mentioned, I love to meet creators and hear your story, what you're working on, how you learned Unreal Engine, or your background and how I can help you learn Unreal Engine or Twinmotion as well. So feel free to, I would say LinkedIn is probably the best place to find me, or studioladder.com, which also has my email and a few ways of contacting me there also.
Yeah, we'll put some of these links in the show notes and maybe even a couple direct links to some of my favorite public talks that Sam has given in the past. So a lot of those are like behind, you know, closed webinars and all that, but some of them are right there on YouTube, including on Unreal Engine's channel. So we'll get a few of those out there. Thank you so much, Sam. Any final words to everyone out there before we say goodbye for now?
Yeah, I just want to thank you, Alex, for having me, and also encourage any creators out there, if you feel frustrated, don't give up. Know that there are, as Alex said, people who have also struggled. We're here to help you and want you to succeed. And so please feel free to reach out. You're not alone. Reach out if you have any questions.
Amazing. Thank you, Sam. We've been trying lately to end the podcast when we're in the studio with a virtual high five. Do you think we can pull that off together?
Oh, I would love to do that. Wait, can I first get which hand is...
Yeah, I see. Okay, first thing is getting the directionality correct. And then you need to find like where the edge of the screen is, and like you got to get like the angle right.
Wait, I went too far.
Hold on. Okay, so we're gonna back up.
Oh, my hand looks huge. I gotta pull it back.
Hold on. We're gonna go. Hold on. Pull back. We're gonna go 3, 2, 1. 3, 2, 1.
Okay.
Ready? 3, 2, 1. High five! Boom! Yeah, we did it. That was fantastic. Amazing. Thank you, Sam.
That was very entertaining.
We will see you again very soon. Thanks everyone for listening. Be sure to like, rate, subscribe on our link tree to all the different socials out there. And we'll see you next time. Cheers.
That's good. Bye.